Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of HSJ's Health Check Podcast. I'm Nicholas Carding, and today I'm joined by HSJ Bureau Chief Lawrence Dunhill and correspondent Henry Anderson. Now, what unhappy development links integrated care systems in Staffordshire, Essex and Greater Manchester? Well, as Lawrence and Henry will cover shortly, their organisations face having to make significant staffing cuts in order to hit their financial targets in 2024-25. And they're very unlikely to be alone in that regard. One of the ICSs has even warned that cutting staff to achieve break-even would risk significant harm to patients. In other words, austerity in the NHS is back with a vengeance following the pandemic. We're going to unpick all this. And to start, Henry, can you give us a brief overview of what the NHS financial situation looks like now that we're going into or have just started the new financial year?
Hello, yes. Great to be on the podcast today.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We're currently in the grips of the planning round, which seems to get kind of more tortuous every year. So next week, ICSs will be submitting their final, final is italicised, but their final plans for 24-25. Basically, what's happened this year is that the initial draft plans showed quite a large gap for the year ahead of around 6 billion, which isn't unusual because they're very kind of early stage plans that sort of quite high level. The next round of plans, however, showed a gap of 4.5 billion, which was interesting because at the same time last year, there had actually been a much higher rate of improvement. So it's kind of seems like the process had sort of stalled a bit. And we'll find out how much improvement there has been kind of next week when we start to see the plans. But I think it's safe to say that we'll probably see a lot more ICSs planning a deficit for 24-25 than we did at this point last year, because to sort of recap briefly, last year we saw a smaller number of ICSs put in deficit plans at the start of the year, but then by the end of the year a much larger group had fallen into deficit during the year. What NHS England has been trying to do is kind of hold those organisations at the figure for last year and say, you know, if you ended 23-24 with a 50 million deficit, that is the limit. You can't kind of plan for a worse deficit in 24-25. We kind of don't yet know how successful that strategy will actually be.
Okay. So yeah, because I remember last year, most of them did set break-even plans, didn't they? And then it did unravel, as you say. So you think this year there's going to be more trusts that are going to be refusing to submit a break-even plan. They're not even going to try and submit one because they know it's futile.
Yeah, I think a lot of people almost had their fingers burnt slightly because they'd kind of signed up to break-even, you know, with a fair amount of kind of goodwill and like, you know, this is the right thing to do. And then it for a lot of areas, it didn't take very long for those kind of portrait plans to come under quite a lot of stress and, you know, people falling off into deficit. I think part of the issue was that NHS England was kind of pushing areas to use assumptions that were kind of proved to be unrealistic quite quickly around inflation and things like that. So one of the big things was that people were drawing up plans based on the assumption that inflation would be quite a lot lower than it actually turned out to be. So that kind of created a financial pressure from the off. I think there's possibly less goodwill this year than there was last year.
Yeah, and just before we come on to these stories that we're now seeing in terms of staffing cuts, just very quickly, do we know anything about whether or not the NHS will finish the financial year just gone in break-even, or if it's going to be in the red?
We don't know yet, but we do know that it was very close. And Julian Kelly, who is the Chief Finance Officer for NHS England, said the NHS England group, which is basically everything kind of consolidated into one financial reporting unit, I think he said he was balance of probability confident that they wouldn't overspend. So it wasn't exactly a sort of ringing endorsement. And he said that hinged on a few contractual disputes. And I'm sort of reading between the lines, I guess, like how those disputes were resolved. And I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. The first is that it's either a small overspend or a very small underspend, so it's kind of not massively overspent. The second way is that
Literally.
culturally, it's quite embarrassing, and it would be the first time, I think, in sort of not far off a decade, that the NHS as a whole had overspent its budget. So it would, I think, be significant if it turns out they have overspent their budget.
Okay. And I guess we'll find out in a month or two's time, won't we, presumably. So we'll await that. But obviously, amid all this very difficult financial environment, we're now starting, I think it's fair to say, to see the impact of what's happening at a local level. And we've had a couple of stories in HSJ in the last week where ICSs have been publicly saying what the impacts of the financial squeeze are going to be. And let's start in Staffordshire, Henry. And you wrote a story about them this week. They've made some, I suppose, as board paper reports go, they've made some fairly striking comments in respect to their plans. What have they said?
Yeah, it's interesting. So we begin our journey in the West Midlands. And they Staffordshire and Stoke ICS produced quite an interesting report, which basically said that portrait we the only if we the only way we can balance the books or to get to a break-even budget, we would need to cut 2,000 jobs or 2,000 posts. And that's across three trusts in the ICS, and then the ICB would kind of have to do various painful cuts, cancel contracts, etc. And they had include the so it's obviously very large scale. I think they're currently the board paper said that they're looking at a deficit of around 90 million for 23 for sorry they posted a 90 million deficit in 23-24, and they're currently looking at 130 million deficit for 24-25. So, and the document, which was kind of presented to the board, contained the quite striking lines that staff cuts on this scale would bring our teams below safe staffing levels and have a quote profound effect on our ability to deliver safe services. And they basically turned what my reading is they've turned the issue back to NHS England. They said, "We're expecting to reduce the deficit, but to go further would require service reductions. We would appreciate a conversation about these choices." I think it's really interesting because having spoken to people in the other parts of the country, and this was picked up in some of the Following the Money newsletters that I've done, that there was a sense that people were kind of stuck. There was, they basically had already committed to holding staff down,
So
portrait of no staffing growth or marginal staff reductions. They had quite high efficiency savings already penciled in, probably beyond the point that they thought was realistic. But they still had very big deficits.
and you know.
Portrait, something has to give in that equation. And I think, and that conundrum is kind of is what people have been saying, and that actually, this seems to illustrate it very well, because the Staffordshire report says elsewhere that, would regulators support seeing staffing levels reduce in line with the available budget? So it's basically kind of saying, it can either be a break even, or it can be a break even plan, or it can be massive staffing reductions. It's kind of turning the question back to NHS England.
Yeah, so is the ICS basically saying, yeah, it's one of these three options, and you tell us which option you want us to go with, effectively? Is that what they mean by we would appreciate a conversation, did you think, in kind of plain English?
Yeah, I think, and then there is a kind of quote from a board member in the article where they're basically saying that they're not going to get back to break even. They have a plan to get back to balance, kind of over a 3-4 year timescale. In it, officially, guidance is like you have to break even. So it's kind of basically getting at, either we have to do this really unpalatable thing, or you give us a bit of latitude on the kind of deficit, which is, kind of understandable because these things do take time to kind of fix, and you know, to get back to kind of break even in a sustainable way is not going to be a kind of a 1 year job. It's basically the argument that they're making.
Yeah, they're saying it's going to take several years, three, four, five, potentially. Yeah, and so that's Staffordshire. And if we travel then south to Essex, we had a similar, I think, story again reported on by you, where they are now going to cut quite a few posts. They're not saying that if we cut this, there could be risks, so we're not sure. They're going to cut it, and that's the decision made. Is that correct?
It is indeed, yeah. So we're now in mid and South Essex, so the trust, yeah, who's issued the CEO's issued a message to staff saying that the trust has a requirement to cut around 600 whole-time equivalent posts, with the rather ominous addition that the requirement is not something we can control. So the kind of signalling is very much, it doesn't say this explicitly, but you know, the trust is kind of in what was formerly called special measures, was placed there recently for financial concerns. So it's sort of fairly clear that they see this as an order coming from above. They say they kind of need to act so they can shape the process themselves, otherwise they'll be issued with a complete freeze on all recruitment activity from NHS England.
So this is a case then of, we assume, NHS England telling the trust you need to make cuts in your organisation, because you're in SOF 4, and we're going to leave you to decide where to do it. But if it doesn't happen, we're going to have to come in and basically take charge of it ourselves. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's sort of what the message is getting at. Yeah, the requirement is not something we can control, it says, but how we deliver it is. So they're kind of, I think notably they it does seem to include clinical vacancies are kind of being looked at and that kind of thing. It's I think with all these stories, it's important to kind of stress that there are kind of roles. But those roles, which are funded, but those roles might not necessarily be filled. They might be vacant. So you can kind of remove those kind of posts without necessarily, you know, making someone redundant effectively. But it does seem that they're kind of looking at both, and it's against a wider backdrop of recruitment freezes and then redundancies in other areas.
And do you get a sense, either in Essex or in Staffordshire for that matter, of where exactly these cuts will be made in terms of the types of workforce we're talking about? You mentioned in Essex there could be cuts to clinical roles, whether it's vacancies or not, and obviously I suppose that's kind of the last place that the trusts want to go, isn't it? But that's already starting to look like a likely occurrence that they're going to have to dip into clinical roles as well as non-clinical.
Yeah, I think it's a conundrum that people are grappling with. Port the
True.
kind of, you know,
It's
port the kind
true.
of view that obviously it's sort of easier to reduce non-clinical roles in terms of the amount of sort of politically and kind of from the public perspective. But then there is obviously this question about the NHS probably needs more kind of management capacity, not less. And we kind of went through a similar process with the Landsley reforms, where they got rid of a lot of those non-clinical roles, and then had to kind of realise that that was probably a mistake in terms of the capacity of the system. So, I mean, it's not really entirely clear where and how the distribution of roles to go will fall. I think it's probably worth noting that actually there was a similar conversation this time last year, but it never really seemed to bite. So there were, you know, NHS England was telling organisations to have no staffing growth, but you can look at the figures and it didn't happen. This year, it does actually feel like there will be reductions in staffing.
And we'll come back to that point about the workforce growth in a second. But just before we do, the last station on our journey of ICS cuts. We're going back up on the North West train line up to Greater Manchester. We're to bring in Lawrence, you're the North West correspondent. The similar story at the Northern Care Alliance. What's happening there?
Portugal.
Yeah, so this is an unusual one in that it actually is a full-blooded redundancy scheme. I think these are very unusual in the NHS because the workforce is so large, there is a lot of turnover. Sort of 5 to 10% is normal in any organisation. And so if you do need to reduce headcount, you simply just freeze recruitment and your headcount will naturally come down. So it's very rare that you actually have to do a big redundancy scheme. But that's what's happening at the Northern Care Alliance, where they've told staff that they've had a 20% increase in costs in their corporate services, and that they're going to have to reduce their headcount by 14%. We think that's, we don't know exactly how many roles that is, but they've launched a 45-day consultation period, which is what's required if it's more than 100 roles. So we know that it's more than 100. And some of the teams that are within that, you know, most members of the public think corporate services are, who cares about them? But it does include some very sort of patient-focused teams, including infection prevention control, quality improvement, patient safety teams, and then teams like PALS, complaints and patient experience as well. So lots of roles where it really will have an impact on frontline services. But also, of course, as Henry was saying, the kind of the more back office management roles that are still really important in making sure the NHS is working well and efficiently.
Do we know what's driven that 20% increase in corporate posts? Because it sounds quite high. And I mean, the some of those jobs you mentioned, infection prevention, PALS, complaints, etc. I mean, every trust has to have them. But is there a reason why they potentially have seemed to have grown quite a lot at the NCA?
So that is interesting, and we'll come on to this in a minute. But to some extent, that does just mirror the national growth overall. But also, the Northern Care Alliance, the sort of local interest here, was formed a few years ago through the merger of Pennine Acute Hospitals and Salford Royal Trust. And obviously, when you bring two big trust together like that, there's the idea that you're going to get some economies of scale. But what the trust did at the time was, I don't think they wanted to move too fast on that. And there's four different acute hospitals in the trust. And what they did was create independent management teams on each hospital site, because they were really keen to kind of have a lot of management grip on each site, and to, I suppose, to sort of foster competition between them, and so that there was accountability on each of the sites. There'd been previous criticism in a CQC report that the execs were too sort of remote in a central location and weren't aware of what was going on each of the local sites. And so if you imagine the exec and management structure in a single trust, the Northern Care Alliance has actually put the equivalent of that in on each hospital site as well. And then they've had a corporate team sitting above that. And that may have been a good idea at the beginning, because it, you know, bringing together to those two trusts, and particularly Pennine Acute, which had all sorts of problems, was always going to be really difficult. And so that may have been the right thing to do. I'm not going to say whether or not it was, I don't know. I think it will have led to some of those excess corporate costs.
Yeah. So it's, in other words, it's, yeah, difficult to kind of square the circle of, you know, when you are bringing together organizations and hospitals, you want to retain that grip and, you know, accountability and control. Often, sometimes when it's gone wrong in the past, that hasn't, obviously that grip has been lost, and I can kind of understand why NCA want to do that. But then it's a bit, now obviously it feels, You can't have it's what are they supposed to do if that also comes with such an increased level of for want of a better word, bureaucracy and corporate services that they now have to cut. It kind of feels like you can't win either way almost, but however you want to approach organizational change like that.
Yeah, well, and they now have a they've ended the financial year that's just finished with a 70 million deficit, which was 40 million off plan, and so they have to now do some quite drastic things and take some of that management out.
So have they said how much they'll save from doing this? Sorry to interrupt.
No, they haven't put a number on the redundancy scheme itself. So no, we'll try and figure that out. But there's incidentally is also Northern Carolinas is also a big part of the Greater Manchester system, and staff in the Greater Manchester system have been told this morning that the ICB has effectively been put in special measures. We've reported for a long time the problems that they've had with finances and other performance issues. But it in ICB commissioning speak, it's called legal undertakings that NHS England have placed on them. And it effectively means that they haven't been doing what NHS England needed them to do quickly enough. And they're going to have to make some new commitments
Fortune.
on their improve about how fast they will improve. And if those are not met, NHS England then have the power to remove the chief exec and other leaders if they want to. It's quite a serious sort of step for the Greater Manchester system. And I think it's only the second ICB to be in this to have these legal undertakings along with Hampshire.
Not a happy ending for the devolution capital, Greater Manchester, which I know is kind of maybe a bit of a historical term these days, but
Yeah,
it's not a.
I think I've called the death of Greater Manchester devolution several times now, probably on the podcast as well, but many times in writing. But yeah, it's long gone.
So I mean, all these stories, they paint quite a bleak picture for 2024, 25, because, and of course, these are only three ICSs we happen to have reported on because they've announced this in their board papers or wherever, but obviously I'm sure there probably are other ICSs in a very similar position. But just wanted to ask both of you, and Lawrence, obviously you've got the benefit of having been around for quite a while now and having covered finance in the previous decade. It feels obviously in the pandemic years there was more money around for the NHS, but now it does feel like, for me, it feels like we've gone back to 2016, 2017 maybe. But so it's almost like we've regressed. How do you think that the difficulties compare now to, those pre-pandemic years? Are things worse now, or has it still not gone back to the years of austerity?
Worse in terms of the sort of morale of staff and the financial outlook,
I
or
just mean the financial outlook.
right. I think if you look at it at a very high level, it's better because there is a lot more, the funding has increased at a faster rate than it was in the previous decade, and the NHS got an awful lot of money during COVID and was able to store away lots of that money in its balance sheets and hire a lot more staff. So if you just look at the staffing growth over the last 4 years, it was 17%, and that compares to only 10% in the previous 4 years. So the NHS has had a lot more money, and the government and NHSE are now trying to get it back to the sort of path it was on before COVID. And so, because it's had that sort of sharp growth in funding and workforce, the pain is going to be felt sort of quite sharply because that needs to come down sharply. So I think it might feel worse, but if it, I'm not sure it is actually worse.
That's an interesting perspective. Henry, what do you think? Do you agree with that?
I think if you kind of strip back the if you sort of zoom out and you look at the fundamentals, then I probably agree with Lawrence. I think when they kind of did the spending trajectories at the spending review in 2021, 2024 five current year was always looked very tight. So obviously you had COVID, big increase from COVID. You had sort of starting to get a bit tighter in 2022, 2023, and then 2023, 2024. And then this year was kind of like the really tight year. And we did see the government basically give a very small amount of money, well, very small, just enough money to kind of give the NHS a sort of tiny real terms increase. But it's effectively flat once you account for inflation. So this year was always going to be a bit of a crunch year. I just think that it just kind of speaks to a much broader kind of lack of strategic thinking and vision, because Portugal, you've had the pandemic where lot and the kind of wake of that, where lots of trusts have actually said, well, yes, we did recruit extra staff, but in many cases we were told to recruit extra staff by NHS England, and we recruited extra staff to maternity services because of Ockenden, and we, more ward staff because of safer staffing requirements. And now you're
Portugal.
telling us to remove them.
And
And we're also being told that a few years hence there will be the biggest ever workforce expansion that the NHS has ever seen.
yeah,
So I just,
pendulum swinging back and forth.
yeah, but it's swinging backwards and forwards in quite a short space of time, which I just think is kind of underscores the sort of lack of vision.
So do we think in 2 years' time suddenly there's going to be lots of with the workforce plan being put into place, so suddenly it's going to be a huge recruitment drive again, basically, and it's going to so but presumably that is focused more at the clinical side rather than the non-clinical perhaps, and maybe it feels like at the moment in some ICSs, such as the Greater Manchester, the NCA, they're looking more at corporate services, or is it going to be a big expansion in both in a couple of years' time?
To be honest, I'm not sure.
I
But
can't see how
me
they
neither.
do. I can't see how they do the, expand corporate services as well. That doesn't seem possible in the financial envelopes that they have. That they are, other trusts are going to have to do what the NCA is doing.
Just lastly, to look ahead to this year then, and what does this all mean? Do you think, Henry, that we're likely to see, as the year goes on, and presumably, plans do start to unravel, albeit maybe not quite at the same scale as last year, do you think we're going to see any kind of intervention, more like a national intervention from an NHSE, in the way that we did see a little bit back in, 20, I think it was 2017, 18, when we had things like the capped expenditure process that was introduced for certain, areas? Is that more on the cards this year, that if the things do start to go awry?
It's interesting because I think if you took a sort of holy, you would expect that given what's happened on one level. But I think I would say no. I think what's been interesting thus far is a complete the very much a lack of those kind of formal financial kind of architecture and mechanisms, Pre-COVID, you kind of there's sort of a degree of a more almost like a more rules-based system, where if you deliver this deficit, you will get this much extra money. If you do, you're in this program, and that comes with these requirements. And whereas this feels a lot more ad hoc, a bit more uncertain, and it's sort of just managed as you go through the year. I think, for example, late in 23, 24, we had the kind of distribution of ex of funding to ICSs that kind of hadn't really been signaled at all before, and things like that. And I think that is another thing that makes it quite difficult at a local level to plan ahead.
I think one thing that makes that's made this period quite uncertain is just the fact that we have a very unstable government. And if you think back to, if I think back to when I soon after I joined HSJ in 2016, there was a sort of big financial reset that happened in response to the financial problem, and they gave all trusts control totals, and then and there was a big pot of incentive funding that they would get if they met those control totals. And I'm not saying that would be the right thing to do now. There were lots of problems with that, but it was a big sort of ambitious structure that they put in place. And I'm just not sure that that could happen at the moment, because there isn't the sort of solidity at the centre to put something like that in, and so it just feels like we're waiting really until after the election, and then a new structure will be put in place then. I was just thinking as well on the workforce growth that a lot of trusts use COVID money to essentially fill vacancies, and I suppose they would say to get up to the staffing establishments that they should be at. And if you look at a lot of trusts that had the largest growth, a lot of them were mental health trusts, a sector which we know has been sort of underfunded over many years. But I think NHS England's and Department of Health's pushback on that, and certainly Treasury's pushback on that, is okay, so you filled all these vacancies now and improved your staffing levels. So in theory, that should lead to better, to safer services, to better quality services, to more activity. So where is all that? And so that will then be the challenge for trust to demonstrate that these better staff services have led to clear improvements.
Yeah, and productivity presumably as well, which again is not yet materializing, is it? Yeah. Okay. Well, we've just about run out of time. Just before we go, I just want a yes or no answer from both of you. Is the NHS going to break even in 2024-25, Henry?
Fortune. What do you mean by the NHS? The NHS England group.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, go on, interesting degree,
I'll
whichever,
say
as with the
yes.
NHS as we know it.
I will say yes. But I will add the disclaimer below before you cut me off that there'll be a significant amount of injections and kind of reshuffling going on at the Department of Health and the government level.
Okay, any Lawrence, any contrarian views, or do you is that your view as well?
I think if a kid overspends their pocket money, they can always their parent will
Parents bail them
probably
out.
come along with some extra bit of cash.
But if the parents do that, then the kid never learns that they have to
That's
manage their budget, as
the
some would
world we
say,
live in, yeah.
perhaps.
That's food for thought. Okay, well, thanks very much, Henry and Lawrence, for your insights. We'll be back with another episode next week. The podcast available on all podcast streaming channels, and if there's anything you would like us to discuss or have any questions put to us, please email annabelle.collins@hsj.co.uk. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.